Good morning. You can find that story in Matthew chapter 13, so I encourage you to open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 13. And as you're turning there, straightforward story, right? Really simple. He talks about a farmer, or some of you think it in terms of a sower. A farmer goes out, he's got his bag, reaches into his bag, pulls out seed, and he begins to just spread it around. And the seed's being spread around as he walks through the field. And there are different kinds of soil in the field. Some of the soil is hard packed down. It's probably the path around the side of the field where people walk and seed lands on the path. And then there are other places that are kind of like my backyard where there's stone that's underneath the soil. And there's a little bit of topsoil on top of it. And some of the seed falls on that, but there's not a whole lot of soil there. Other places, there are already weeds that are already growing. Some of the seed falls among those weeds. And then there's some good parts of the field where there are no weeds, deep soil, and some falls on that. And then he talks about the difference of the produce, like how much crops grow from each of those four types of soil. And he says only one of those really produces a significant crop. And here's what Jesus is saying. The quality of the soil will determine the outcome or the output of its growth. Now, we read that, and it seems like a simple story, really easy to understand. Jesus is teaching them, and some of you may think that this is kind of like an illustration, you know. You can teach the truth, and it gets kind of boring. But if you can tell a story, then people are interested. It captures them. They understand it better. Well, now, if that's the case, look at verse 10. Because in verse 10, the disciples asked Jesus a question. The disciples came to him and asked, "Why do you speak to the people in parables?" They're wondering, like, why are you speaking to the people in a parable? See, here's what the disciples understood. That a parable is more like a riddle than it is an explanation. In fact, the word parable literally means to throw beside. So where there's straightforward teaching of truth about the kingdom, Jesus is telling a story alongside of it. Now, if you understand the kingdom, then the story makes sense. But if you don't understand the message of the kingdom, the story doesn't make sense at all. In other words, Jesus is actually making it harder for people who don't get it to get it. In fact, look at what he says. He says, verse 11, Jesus replied, "The knowledge of the secrets of the kingdom of heaven has been given to you, but not to them. Whoever has will be given more, and he will have an abundance. Whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken from him. This is why I speak to them in parables. Though seeing, they do not see. Though hearing, they do not hear or understand. It is said of them, in the fulfillment of Isaiah, you will be ever hearing but never understanding. You will be ever seeing but never perceiving. For this people's heart has become calloused. They hardly hear with their ears. They have closed their eyes. Otherwise, they might turn with their eyes and hear with their ears, understand with their hearts, and turn, and I would heal them." Okay, folks, right now for Jesus, this is game on. This is game on. Here's what he's saying. That up to this point in the ministry, he's been telling everybody about the kingdom. But in chapter 12, the passage we looked at last week, the religious leaders actually rejected Jesus and said he doesn't cast out demons by the power of God. His kingdom is really by the power of Beelzebub or the power of Satan. Jesus is really of Satan. And from that point forward, rather than Jesus continuing to explain the kingdom in a way that those who reject him can get it, he begins to explain the kingdom in a way that only those who accept him will get it. In other words, those people who reject the king, they don't get more information, they get less information. Those people who take a hard-hearted approach to God, he doesn't keep trying harder and harder to reveal himself. He's not chasing them around, saying, "Oh, wait, maybe you didn't listen, maybe you didn't get it. Let me try it with you again and again and again and again." In fact, this passage is telling us the opposite, that the more you listen, the more you're willing to accept what Jesus is saying, the more you tune in, the more revelation you're going to get, and the more you reject, the less you're going to get. Now let me just pause, because this is a really, really hard truth. Let me speak to you guys who've grown up in church. Maybe you're in middle school, maybe you're in high school, and maybe you're here today because mom and dad make you come. And as far as you're concerned, you got the next 35 minutes to be thinking about what tune you're going to download on your new phone. As far as you're concerned, you got the next 35 minutes to kind of think through how you're going to get that girl's attention or that guy's attention. And you're thinking, man, when I graduate and get out of this place and get away from mom and dad, I am done with this. I'm done with this. Now, in the strongest sense that I can appeal to you, listen to what Jesus is saying right here. He's saying to the people who have heard the message from the king and have chosen to harden their heart and reject it, I'm not listening to this. I'm not paying attention. I'm done with this. As soon as you guys quit talking, I'm out of here. As soon as I get a chance to get away, I'm away from this. You know what's going to happen to you, according to Jesus? You're going to start getting so hard that it's going to become harder and harder and harder for you to understand and get the truth. And some of you are thinking, yeah, like, I don't get it at all. Like, I don't understand what's the big deal for people. Like, why in the world do my parents drag me in here? You know what's happened? It's already started. It's already started. You're starting to lose it. You're not getting it. That's a huge warning. On the other hand, some of you guys are going to notice that the more that you've been willing to submit to the lordship of Jesus and listen to him, the more things are starting to make sense for you, the more you're beginning to learn, the more you're beginning to catch, and you're thinking, why did I not start earlier? Because, man, this is becoming just, it's overwhelming how amazing this is. I want to hear more from the word. I want to know how to live for Jesus. I want to follow him. You know what's happening with you? It's what Jesus said here. To whom those who are ready to receive, you're going to actually get more. And for those of you who don't, you're going to get less. Now, look at what he says to the disciples. He goes on to say in verse 16, but blessed are your eyes because they see, and your ears because they hear. For I tell you the truth, many prophets and righteous men long to see what you see, but did not see it, and to hear what you hear, but did not hear it. What's he saying? He's saying, listen, disciples, all through the history of the world, people have wanted to see the coming of the king. They've wanted to experience the power of the kingdom, and you guys are getting it. And really, by extension, we in the church, we've actually seen the king. We've seen the risen Jesus Christ. We understand the message of the gospel. We know that the kingdom's coming. We've been enlightened by this. Blessed are those people who get that. We live in a time in history that's blessed. People in the Old Testament longed to get what we get. What happens to a group of people that when they've been given truth consistently, they ignore it? That's a dangerous place to be. Now, having said that, Jesus then goes on and explains the parable that he just taught about the sower, and explains it in a way that those people who are actually listening want to know, are paying attention, understand the kingdom, you're going to get this. This is going to make sense to you. And he's going to talk about the different kinds of soil. Now, let me just start out with a principle on your outline there, just a basic principle, and that is harvests happen where seeds are sown. Harvests happen where seeds are sown. In other words, if Jesus wasn't sowing the message, if the disciples weren't sowing the message, if the church wasn't sowing the message, parents, if you weren't sowing the message, students, if you're not sowing the message, then there's not going to be any fruit, okay? Harvests happen when the sower sows the seed. So the goal of the church, the goal of the Christian is to get the gospel out there, get the good news of the kingdom out there. We need to be doing that, okay? Beyond that, we want to move to the second principle, and that is that harvests happen in fertile soil. Harvests happen in fertile soil. We're going to look at the four different kinds of soil, or the four different responses to the message of the kingdom. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to ask yourself, which one of these best describes me? Which one of these best describes me? Well, let's dive in here together. We start out with the first type of soil, and we see it in verse 18. He says, listen then to what the parable of the sower means. When anyone hears the message about the kingdom and does not understand it, the evil one comes and snatches away what is sown in his heart. This is the seed sown along the path. Mark's gospel says that birds actually came and snatched it away. It's kind of like the birds represent Satan. The seed falls on the path, on the hard ground. It's not going anyplace because the soil is so hard-packed. The heart is so hardened that the seed lands, it sits there, it doesn't germinate, doesn't grow, and Satan takes it and snatches it away. I call this the hard soil, and this is easy pickings for the enemy. Now, those of you from Texas, you understand that phrase, easy pickings, right? Some of you actually saw that yesterday. Kansas was easy pickings for Baylor. Right, was it like 55-7 or something like that? Did you guys watch a different game? I thought the only Texas team playing yesterday was Baylor, so I don't know. Sorry for the side trail. I know some of you guys are going to miss the rest of the message because you're still angry about all that, but here's the bottom line. The bottom line is when people are resistant to even listen, they don't want to know about God. They don't want to accept the fact that Jesus Christ could be true. Then in that kind of soil, there's no room for growth. In fact, what this passage says is that's a place where Satan himself comes and he takes it away. They can't even remember it. They don't even get it. It doesn't even stick with them. They're just kind of in one ear and out the other ear. And my fear is that a lot of people in our culture are like that. They see a church all through the town. They hear Christian messages, but they just, it's like they don't get it at all. It's not registering. It's just bouncing off of them. In 2007, the Washington Post sponsored an experiment where they were trying to ask the question, can beauty actually be discerned in the midst of a very strange kind of normal setting? And so they went out and got the concert violinist, Joshua Bell, to go down into the D.C. subway and stand there in the D.C. subway and play his violin. Now, he goes down there. He's got a pair of jeans on and a T-shirt with long sleeves, a baseball cap. He's got his violin case, and he opens up his violin case, and he reaches in, and he pulls out his $3 million Stradivarius in the subway, drops a few dollars in his violin case to just kind of set the mood, kind of seed the crowd for what's coming, and he begins to play Mozart and Schubert. And you know what happens? Everybody stops, right? Wrong. People continue on their way in and out of the subway. They counted over 1,000 people that went by. Of the 1,000 people that went by, only 27 of them actually stopped to put some money in the violin case. $35. For 45 minutes, he played one of the most beautiful concerts ever heard by the human ear. And almost nobody listened. Now, keep in mind that a week before, he'd filled the Boston Symphony Hall with the average ticket price being $100 a head. But playing there in that subway station, nobody paid attention. And every single day, God is playing this incredible, beautiful symphony called the Kingdom of God. He's playing it in the hearts of people who are so dissatisfied with the corruption and injustice in the world. He's playing it in the most beautiful ways by those who, with the hands and feet of Jesus Christ, are getting their hands and feet dirty, serving people and helping people by this incredible hope, this good news of the gospel. And day after day after day, people are walking by this incredible, beautiful concert, and they're not getting it. That's the hard soil. That's the soil that nothing grows in. Second kind of soil that Jesus talked about is the shallow soil. It's the shallow soil. Quick growth, but no stamina. quick growth, but no stamina. The shallow soil has a layer of rock right underneath it, and there's just a little bit of soil, a little topsoil on the top. And here's how Jesus describes it. In verse 20, he says, "What was sown on the rocky places is the man who hears the word and at once receives it with joy." Like, he hears the gospel, the kingdom, gets all excited about it. He receives it. He embraces it. And it says he receives it with joy, but since he has no root, he lasts only a short time. When trouble or persecution comes because of the word, he quickly falls away. Here's the person who, first time he hears the gospel or somewhere along the way hears it, and he gets all excited. Oh, Jesus, yeah, I want to go to heaven. I want to have a relationship with Jesus Christ. I'm excited about him. Maybe even goes and begins to tell friends. And whether this is at a camp, whether it's at some kind of a revival, whether it's a friend sharing, whether it's listening to a radio broadcast, somewhere along the way, gets the gospel, and the passage says he receives it with joy. He thinks this is the answer. But it says that as soon as trouble comes, hardship, Jesus, I didn't think that I would get sick. I didn't think I'd lose my job. I didn't think my girlfriend would break up with me. Like, what's the deal about this? I thought once I put my trust in you, everything would be perfect. Trouble. Like, I didn't buy trouble. I didn't bargain for trouble. I don't want you for trouble. I want you to make my life wonderful. Or, it says, trouble or persecution. That's the peer pressure of people saying, you what? You believe in Jesus? You go to church? You go to Hill Country Bible? Like, what? Are you crazy? Have you given up your intellectual capability? Are you going to become one of those kind of people? You've got to be kidding me. And in the midst of that, the text says that he falls away. The word there in the Greek is scandalize. Your faith becomes scandalous in your life. In other words, if you keep living this way, if you keep talking about this, it's going to create a scandal with your friends. And so you just shut it down. Back off. Have you ever wondered why it's so easy to be aggressive and share the gospel when you're on a go trip doing missions? Or for those of you who did the Great Adventure, like, why it's so easy to do that when you're on the Great Adventure talking to those kids at the backyard Bible clubs and stuff, or Extreme Adventure, and then when it comes to going back to school or going back to work, all of a sudden, it feels really, really hard. Like, I'll talk about Jesus when I'm in a different country or a different context, and I'm really excited. I'm filled with joy. This is so exciting to me. But then when I have to do it in the normal course of my life, like, I want to back off. I want to be quiet. I don't want to talk about this. I don't want to create a scandal for me. And so what happens? Essentially, your faith just withers. Just kind of withers, doesn't produce any fruit. Now, the third kind of soil that we see in this passage is the occupied soil. The occupied soil, the soil that's already occupied with the weeds. What we're saying here is that it's stunted by competing demands. Too many demands on the soil that stunt it. Look at what Jesus says in verse 22. He says, "What was sown among the thorns is the man who hears the word, but the worries of this life and the deceitfulness of wealth choke it, making it unfruitful." In other words, the seed is landing on the ground where the weeds are, and the weeds are competing for resources. They're competing for moisture. They're competing for nutrients. They're competing for sunlight. And so the weeds begin to grow up, and as the weeds begin to grow up, the seed actually, the plant that starts to grow, never produces any fruit. It kind of gets clogged up in the competing demands. And he says that a lot of us would come to faith in Jesus Christ and we begin our Christian life, and then the worries of this world, like, you know, I got to pay the bills. I got to get my grades. You know, I've got to make do with these relationships that God's placed me in. The transmission's about to go out on my car. And all that stuff just becomes a priority. It just becomes a worry. You start thinking about that all the time, and that becomes the distraction. You put your life into that. Or the other phrase he uses in that passage, look at it, calls it the deceitfulness of wealth. Now, how many of you guys know that more money is not the solution to your problems? You know that. About three of you. See, you guys have already bought in. You've already bought in. They approached John Rockefeller, one of the richest men in the world at his time, and asked him the question, how much does it take to be happy? You know what he said? One more dollar. Just one more dollar. That's the deceitfulness of wealth. That when I get to a certain point where I can have something I really want, or I don't have to worry anymore, or I'll be able to take my vacations or buy my stuff or buy my friends or whatever I want, when I get to that point, then I'll be happy. Sometimes we do it throughout the whole course of our life. We're thinking, well, you know, right now, I'm in high school, I'm just young, I don't have that much, you know, to offer, and so right now what I'm going to do is I'm going to have fun right now. I'm going to join my friends, hang out with them, but when I go to college, I'm going to get serious about my faith. And so, like, right now, I'm just going to make do. But when I get to college, then I'm going to plug in with something that's going to help me grow. I'm going to move forward. And then you get to college, and you realize, well, college is a lot harder than school, unless you're in the IB program. And then college is a lot harder than school. And so, you know, I've got more, and there's more distractions and more demands, and I got all this freedom, and I don't know what to do. And the people here are actually more hostile than the people in my high school were. So when I get out of college, that's when I'm going to start walking with Jesus. And then you get out of college, and you get a job, and you're trying to pay the bills, and all of a sudden you realize this is tougher than you thought, and then you add a spouse in there. Some kids start coming. Now you got a mortgage, and I've got to establish myself financially, and I'm slugging it out to move along, and I'm thinking to myself, at some point in time, I'm going to get serious about the kingdom, but you never do. And then when you get to retirement, you think to yourself, well, I've been working so hard, slaving away my whole life. Now it's time to enjoy the life that I have left. Let me just live for me. That's called the deceitfulness of wealth, that somewhere, some way along the way, that my lifestyle needs will be taken care of, and then I'll be available for Jesus. Then I'll be available to follow him. What happens is your kingdom resources, your time, your energy, your gifts, your passions, they get diverted and they never go into producing fruit. The last kind of soil that Jesus talks about is fertile soil. That's soil that's deep, that's soil that's rich, and that's soil where all the resources in the soil are focused on producing fruit. They're focused on producing fruit. Look at verse 23. He says, but what was sown on good soil is the man who hears the word and understands it. He produces a crop yielding 160 or 30 times what was sown. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about the details of what that looks like to produce a crop in just a moment, but let me just capture a few thoughts that we need to understand. As Jesus is telling his disciples about the kingdom and using this parable, there's a few things that he tells us. The first one is, not everyone will respond to the gospel message. In other words, not everyone who hears the gospel will accept it. We just need to be aware of that. He says there's a kind of soil that's hard, and when those people hear the gospel, they're not going to respond to it. Second, not everyone who responds to the gospel will actually produce kingdom fruit. Not everybody who responds to the gospel will actually produce kingdom fruit. And think about it. There's shallow soil. There's the soil with all the thorns and thistles in it, the weeds. They don't produce any fruit. The third truth that we find in this passage is those who respond and produce fruit, there's going to be different levels of production, some 30, some 60, some 100. In other words, as people begin to produce fruit, some people are going to produce a lot of fruit, and some people are not going to produce as much. There's going to be fruit production at different levels, different amounts of harvest. But the goal of all this is that we would use our lives to produce kingdom-type fruit. Now, some of you would say, well, now, as I listen to this, I kind of find myself being the shallow soil person. You know, I'm afraid of persecution, and so I don't produce much fruit. Or I kind of find myself being the one that's in the thorny ground. I've got all these cares and worries, and so I don't really produce much fruit. So really what I'm wondering is, am I really saved? Am I really saved? In fact, I would say to you, as I got ready to preach this message, I just kind of looked around at what other guys are saying about this passage, and 9 out of 10 sermons on this passage are about who's in and who's out. Like, which of you guys are in the kingdom and which are you outside the kingdom? And let me just say that if that's what you're thinking, am I in or out, or you're looking at your spouse or my kids or my friends, are they in or out? If that's what you're thinking, you're missing the whole point of what Jesus is saying here. Now think about it. This is a passage and a parable about producing kingdom fruit. And if you reduce it to who's getting in and who's not getting in, here's what you're doing. You're reducing it to the point where you're saying this: what's the least amount of fruit I can produce and still get into heaven? It's a reductionistic argument. What's the least amount of kingdom fruit or kingdom activity can I have and still be able to someday be under the kingship of Jesus? Jesus is not talking about who gets in. Jesus is talking about what kind of stuff is being produced by your life. And so many of us focus on, if I can just find a way to get into the kingdom and then between now and then just live however I want to, you completely don't understand why you've been saved, what salvation is all about, why you were actually created in the first place, and what God's placed you here for. You're missing the whole point. Philip Yancey wrote a book about heaven. In the book about heaven, he tells a story about his pastor in Colorado. His pastor in Colorado was excited to take his four kids on a vacation. And being kind of a character, he decided that he wasn't just going to lay it out there what they were going to do. He was going to set them up. He was going to set his kids up. I don't know how many of you guys set your kids up, but he was going to set his kids up. So he told them, "Kids, we are going to take the most fantastic vacation in our whole lives. We are going to leave Denver, Colorado, and we are going to Junction City, Kansas. Can you believe it? You've got to understand, kids, in Junction City, Kansas, they've got a swimming pool. They've got a merry-go-round. They've got an ice cream shop, and I think they might even have a bowling alley." And his kids bought it hook, line, and sinker. They're out bragging to their friends. "Hey, we're going on vacation to Junction City, Kansas. Man, we're really cool." What the kids didn't know is that they were going to stop in Junction City on their way to Disney World. And Dad had already arranged a Disney World vacation, and they were just stopping in Junction City along the way to tour the church that this pastor, Peter's grandfather, had started. They're just going to see it and then keep on going. Well, so they get to Junction City, and they tour the church, and they get back in the van, and they start to drive away, and the kids are going, "What are we doing?" And Dad gets a big smile on his face and said, "We're going to Disney World." And Mom reaches in a bag and pulls out four Mickey Mouse hats to put on the kid's head. And the kids say, "Oh, no. We want to stay in Junction City. Let's go to the hotel so we can go swimming. I thought we were going to get to go bowling. Dad, you promised us Junction City. We don't want to go to Disney World." I don't know if anybody here has ever been to Junction City before, but I got the postcard. Here's what it looks like. So the kids wanted to stay in Junction City when they could have enjoyed the fantasy of Disney World, rather than being in this magical place that was built and created for fun, where every square acre is another mystery. They wanted to spend their time looking at the clock tower in Junction City and riding the merry-go-round in Junction City when they could have been riding on Space Mountain. Now you tell me. You tell me. See, here's the problem. God says to us, I've got this kingdom that I am building. And in this kingdom, there will be no more war. There'll be no more angry motorists. There will be no more sin, no more lust, no more divorce, no more broken lives. There'll be no more eating disorders. There'll be nobody taking advantage of anybody else. In fact, all of your gifts and all of your abilities will be channeled into building the most incredible civilization that you could ever imagine. And I, Jesus Christ, will rule and reign over you, and you will experience my pleasure, my blessing. I'm building this for you. And you know what? Even now, in this period of time, building up to that, you can begin to experience the kingdom blessing today. Freedom from sin, freedom from bondage. You can begin to live out my life and begin to invest in people and do kingdom things even in the here and now. And you know what we say? We say, oh, Jesus, I don't want the kingdom. I want Cedar Park. I want the little house on my street to be my kingdom. I just want a nicer automobile. If I could just get the extended cab, then I'll be happy with that. If I can just get this girl to go out with me, that's really what that's what I'm focused on. That's what I want. If I just do that, that's what my life is all about. Just get my college degree. That's all I care about. That's what I'm working for. And we settle for Junction City, Kansas, when Jesus Christ is offering us Disney World, because we don't want to make the trip. What does it look like to make the trip? What does it look like for your life to produce kingdom fruit? Three things. For your life to produce the fruit of the harvest of a kingdom, the first one is devotion to the King. It's devotion to the King. Here's what you got to understand. Jesus Christ is the most fascinating, the most incredible person. And he wants to have a relationship with you. Now stop for a moment. Think about the magnitude of who Jesus is. Jesus Christ, the one who in very nature God decided to leave heaven and come to earth to walk among us, to experience Junction City, Kansas. But not just Junction City, Kansas, to be the lowest of the low there. To come into a place to be mistreated, misunderstood, to actually be tried as a criminal and take a punishment that did not belong to him because he was bearing your sin and my sin. And now, he's risen from the dead. He's seated at the right hand of the Father to live and make intercession for us. In other words, he's talking to God on your behalf. He's talking to God on behalf of the sin that you committed yesterday that Jesus Christ through his blood has paid for. And he's telling the Father, I've taken care of that. I've taken care of that. Don't put judgment on that person. I've dealt with that. Jesus Christ is the one who's interceding for your needs in this world and talking to the God of the universe about you. And that Jesus Christ wants to have a relationship with you. Wants you to know him, to be close to him. And growing in that knowledge of Jesus Christ will be the most satisfying relationship that you will ever have. Are you growing in your knowledge of Jesus? You know, the people to whom much is given, even more will be given. Those who have soft hearts and respond and who seek Jesus, you're going to get more and more and more of him. Devotion to Jesus. Second is transformation by the King. Transformation by the King. You see, Jesus wants to liberate you from the power of sin in your life, to free you from the bondage, to badness, and to give you a new life. That's why in Galatians chapter 5 it says the fruit of the Spirit, that which is produced by life with Jesus, is love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, kindness, self-control. Like all the qualities that make your life good, that give you the ability to relate to other people well, to have a good marriage, to have a good relationship with your parents, to have a good relationship with the boss in your office and other employees, to have a good relationship with your neighbors, all those qualities that give you like kingdom life kind of stuff, Jesus Christ is going to do that in you if you allow him to transform you. And finally, to be on mission with the King. Jesus Christ has a purpose for each of our lives, and that's to produce fruit. Let me ask you this. Who are the people, specifically, who are the people that you're sharing the good news with and that you're discipling that are going to then produce fruit that multiply your harvest, that multiply you? Who are they? Can you name someone? I had a really, really, really unusual thing happen to me a while back. It actually started when I was a sophomore in college. I was going to a Christian university and had a buddy there that we were friends. We played basketball together and hung out together. He had a brother that was at the secular university in the same town that I was in, and his brother just didn't want to have anything to do with the gospel. Like, he just kept preaching to him and talking to him. His brother didn't want to have anything to do with the gospel. He was a partier. He was a burnout. He loved having fun, and he did not want to have anything to do with the gospel. But because his brother was so persistent, he finally agreed to have a Bible study in his dorm room. So the brother calls me up and says, "Hey, Jim's agreed to have a Bible study in his dorm room. Would you lead it?" Now, I'm a sophomore in college. I'm scared to death. I have no idea. Nobody's ever taught me what to do. I didn't understand how to do it, but I decided, okay, I'll try this. So we'll try it. So we would go over to his dorm room every week, and he'd get a bunch of guys from the dorm who would come and hang out in his room, and we would try to teach them who Jesus was and explain the Bible to them. And like, I'm just kind of stumbling through this, and as I realize I'm stumbling through this, I'm not sure why these guys keep coming back. Like, I don't know why they keep showing up, because they don't seem to be getting it. They don't seem to be engaged. They don't seem to be responding. So I think, you know, I'm wasting my time. Well, later on, after Jim became a believer, he became a believer somewhere through the course of the semester, later on, Jim told me that the way he got all those guys to come to his room was they were smoking weed in his room before we got there. And then they would open the windows and fan and try to get as much clothes out of there as they could to try to clear out the smell. So that's how he was getting people to show up. And I wonder why they weren't getting anything out of what I was teaching. But Jim, that semester, came to faith. And we started discipling this kid who was just totally into partying. As we started discipling Jim, he got really motivated in his walk with Jesus and began to grow. And he decided that he was going to go into ministry, so he transferred into the college that I was part of and started getting trained for ministry. And when we all graduated, I never heard from him. And about 15 years later, I got a letter from Jim Kinney. And the return address said, Caracas, Venezuela. And I opened the letter, and Jim wrote a letter to tell me that he was now a missionary in Venezuela and gave some credit to me for being one of those guys in his life back then that wouldn't let go, that showed up on his turf, that dealt with his junk to help him come to faith and then to begin to disciple him. And he said, "I just want you to know, Tim, that the fruit that's being produced here in this ministry, in this city, some of that is because of you." And at that moment, I began to really realize what it means to produce fruit, to meet people, to share the good news with them, to begin to disciple them so that they understand and become kingdom people. And then they go out and they do things that produce fruit, and they reach other people as well. And suddenly you begin to look at your life and say, well, there's 30-fold, or there's 60-fold, or there's 100-fold. There's all kinds of supernatural things going on. And all I did was get involved with an individual, put some time and energy into them, love them. So my question to you is, are you on mission with the King? Who could you specifically name right now that you're working with that's producing fruit? Who would those men and women be? Who would those teenagers be? Who are those children that you're working with to help them produce fruit? You see, that's what the kingdom life is all about. It's growing in devotion to the King, coming to love Jesus more and to know him more. It's being transformed by the King. Our lives are taking on a new shape. And then it's going on mission with the king where we're actually out there making a difference in people's lives. So I ask you the question that Jesus was asking the crowd. And that question is, what's your soil? Like, what's your soil? What's the deal with your soil? Well, let's just bow our heads and take a moment to think about that before God. Just take a moment to think about that before God. As we sit here together, I just want to encourage you. If you find yourself being in that first category, that the hard soil, this stuff is just bouncing off of you, but today, maybe for the first time, it penetrated just a little bit, I would encourage you, receive the word. Let it transform you. Don't have a hard heart. Of all the warnings pronounced in Scripture, hard heart is the strongest warning. If your life's not producing fruit, you may be distracted, or you may be afraid. Ask Jesus today to begin to free you up to believe in Him. If you're producing fruit, I would encourage you to rejoice and to continue. Don't give up on that. It's going to matter in the kingdom. Whatever your condition is today, be honest before God. What's going on with my soil? What's going on in my heart? Father, I just pray for each person here. There's coming a day when you will unveil your kingdom and Disney World will look boring, drab, and silly compared to the beauty and majesty of what you're doing. We get a taste of that today. May that taste grow into fertile fields in our lives until all may know and all may hear. May the city of Austin be overwhelmed as we go on mission with you, as your kingdom is expanded here in supernatural ways. We pray these things in the powerful name of Jesus Christ. Amen.